Ray Coxon, Rio 2.
I stayed too long in Cairo, anyway. But I did have, while I was a convalescent, a rather unusual job. Well, two. One was to take a man to prison with a loaded... Well, and I was surprised. I went by their nationalised railways, which are far nicer than anything I'd ridden. Mm. I didn't know they were so civilised. They had first class and beautiful things. I took this man. We never spoke. It's a very curious thing about life. I never knew what he was, what he'd done, and he never spoke to me. I never spoke to him. And if he'd run away, I should have shot him. I knew I should have shot him because I was trained to shoot the target. And I hadn't any compassion on him until he got there. I got him there, and the warder who received him, he tried the most foul-mouthed, insulting chap I could have kicked his teeth in. But there, and then he turned to me and he was the nicest part. Oh, I was so disgusted with this. This is one incident. The other is amusing, and I'm going to sing a little song in a minute. This was on a picket. I was put on a picket. This is when I was in Cairo. Picket, because the Australians were inclined to be very rough and smash places up, particularly the wazzers, these awful places where the tarts live. And I was a virgin then, and I still was when I came out, you see, but I was very intrigued by all this. I don't know whether to tell you both sides of this story. First of all, I'm going to tell you about being on picket purely. But being picket purely. We were about six of us. We were put round a corner from where trouble is like to be, out of sight, because we didn't want to provoke anybody. And while I was at one corner, there was a little boy, Arab boy, selling papers, and he spoke very good English. And we began to hobnob a bit. And this was the substance. Well, you English, you're better than us, we're no good. And the reason why we're going was, there's too much fuck here. He said, they don't do it in the morning, they do it after breakfast, they do it in the afternoon, they do it in the evening. They can't be any good like you English, you're not like that, you see. And then he started to sing, and so I picked the song up, and this is how the song went. I tried it on a man from a student of mine, ex-student, from Baghdad, and he pretended he didn't understand it. But I think because they didn't like the Egyptians, anything Egyptian, even the language. And he goes like this. Excuse me. Come, Lilo, come, yom, yak, baby, me shove dinner. Let me do something else. Come, Lilo, come, yom. Come, Lilo, come. Warhead, tightening, talata, kamsa, kapsa, come, Lilo, come, yom. I don't know all of it like that, but it was a bit like that. It was rather fun. I've dined on that several times since. Memory of that. It's a lament, apparently. well, now let's go.
These are some of the drawings you did then, yes, when you were in
Portside. Yes, that was a place you go and leave to Portside in a tent. You're given tents by the thing and do these drawings. And there was Ferdinand de Lesseps. Somewhere with...
The statue of him,
yes. It's been knocked down now by the revolution. First thing they did was to... That's Sarah.
That was your... That was your pack horse.
The pack horse. the tripod. There's this. Yes, so it's malaria.
And this was a drawing, little drawing you made during a retreat.
Yes, that was a drawing immediately after retirement from some action. It's gloomy and depressed. And there was a Scotchman there, dead. I had to go from my hidden rock with the horses down to fetch up the squadron. There were only four in the squadron. It was indicated down there, as it were. And... I said, go and tell them that we've got no men left. Will they come up? very polite. So I trotted down. I was on the fire because I thought if I zigzagged, they wouldn't think I was worth a bullet, so I got there all right. And they came up, everybody suddenly came up, all ran up. It was an exciting moment because we were had been cut off for a bit. I didn't know this, and nobody believed it when the Sergeant Major McKinnon said, we're surrounded. It wasn't quite true because I could see that there was nobody in front of me looking down. We could see the infantry about 50 miles away. It took them a week to come up to this point. Mm. And we were having to hold this so that Allenby could winkle them out of Jerusalem without having to smash it up. Mm. So we were 12 miles north and we cut the road off for a time, but failed to keep it cut. So we got into this awkward place where we ran out of everything, bully fat to rub the machine. The gun showed the Turks where we were because it boiled, and that was a foolish thing to do. Mm. And I saw somebody doing that and running back, and one of the chaps with the gun came running to where I was and thing. Wanted to go to Jerusalem, not Jerusalem, not Jericho.
To Cairo.
Back to Cairo, yeah. And we persuaded him to take it back because I'd seen the man with the tripod moving to another point. Everybody was we were knocked about quite a lot that time. And this is the way back. One of the very man who wanted to run to Cairo was walking. He was about 10 yards in front of me when a bit of shell hit him, and he then started to hobble, and he hobbled like the horses that go when you sleep on the back, they go a bit quicker. I never saw him again. Yes, that was called El Tarta. Sometime I would like to look on the map about these places, El Tarta, and there's another one where this engagement here, the advance on Abishushe. Now, I found Abishushe on the map. It does exist. But how far it is from the hills on the seaside, I'd like to know whether this was a mile or 2 miles. I think it must have been more than 2 miles to the hill that we were going to take, Abishushe. It's a sort of thing a bit like the Malverns hills, you see. And we were told, well, the Austrians have got their guns on the right, and the Turks are on this side, and the machine guns are there in the middle, you see. The Germans got that. We respected the Germans almost affectionately. We were always proud that they'd got Germans and not Turks, because the Turks don't seem to have any belly for it. All we admired about them were the very good shots, but no stomach for it. If Henry VIII had... was it Henry VIII in Hamlet?
Henry
V. Henry V. It's he that hath no stomach for this fight. Let him depart. I like the bit too where he says, his passport shall be made and crowns for Well, these poor things, wait, they must have been upset when about 2 miles away. The reason why I think 2 miles away, that I think a bullet of a rifle is unsafe. It's safe after 2 miles. It can kill up to 2 miles. And I didn't see any bullet marks, only occasional shell bursting as we mounted and stayed there for at least 20 minutes. It may have been 2 hours, but perhaps... because it's upsetting to be a target like that in front of a row of hills where the enemy is watching. You know, I see everything. Visibility is terrific there. Yeah. I mean, from Jerusalem, for instance, all those hills behind, you can see Jaffa. And it looks about 3 miles, but it's 46 on the map. And then you can see Cyprus and the White House. Mm. Yeah, terrific light. We set off here. While we were waiting, I noticed the little sergeant was yawning, so he must be frightened like me. And we wondered where everybody else was. They were all behind, over the ridge. There was a ridge here, and we thought perhaps they were waiting for somebody's late in coming. We waited and waited and waited. But it may have been, of course, that we were frightening these Turks, making the mind up as we were assembling, because we set off. Now, I could only see on the right and in front of me because I was leading Sarah with the tripod. She had to be first there because the gun had to go on her tripod. Mm-hmm. And so I could only see what was going on my right. This is why I drew this with the impedimenta. I don't know where my sword is. It must be somewhere there, but I probably forgot to put that on. There's all the details on the bags, the gut, the rifle, and the 90 rounds of ammunition around the horse, 90 round of ammunition round yourself, and you set off down for a row of hills which got steep here. Mm-hmm. And then the little sergeant murmured rather apologetically, "One man to 12 horses," and all the dud old men of 27 and that which stayed behind, or the chaps that looked ill, and that wasn't many, so stop me saying you see. And off we went. "Put your bayonets on," he said, "put your bayonets on," up this plantation, with enormous rocks all over it and trees, sapling, not very thick trees. And I have my dignity. I walked as slow up there with my finger on the trigger. Good advice from the instructor in England. Never mind about the men, keep your finger on the trigger. And it's silent. There was a silence. I couldn't hear or see anybody. Either I didn't turn around, but I could have been looking in front. I couldn't hear anybody else coming up. And I got up very, very slowly. And at last I got to clear ground. At the top of ground, there was open space. And there was one man who turned out to be a general or something, big shot, and he could speak English. At first, because his arms were folded, I thought, oh, well, I can't kill a man. Sorry, I can't shoot a man who's got his arms folded. He's got to show fight. I mean, I wasn't full of fight. There was a target to the Turk was a target. I looked over and there was this magnificent target. Ooh, hundreds of Turks, black little figures, about 600 yards, walking away. And then at last I said, "Where's that? Where's that gun? Where are they? Where's the rangefinder? Where are they?" And some of them appeared then. They got the gun out, and our gun was the first to open up, and she'd have seen those Turks run. And then I felt something like that go. My hair went like that. I tilted it up like that. And I sigh. I've often thought that sigh was a bullet that was missing me. In a way, it gave me a feeling and a memory that I want to keep off the skyline. So I retried and I went to see what was going on with the prisoner chap. And they'd got two or three people around him, and he was being very snooty. "I wish to be to meet an officer of my own rank," something like that, you see. And somebody said, "You don't meet any bloody officer." They wanted to pull his braces down so that he couldn't escape, because we couldn't stay. And they ordered somebody to go and fetch him some water. And I said, "Don't fetch the water, it's not safe down there." He indicated it was on the other side, on the dangerous side. Just then, we were ordered to move on. And that was the end of this particular battle. Mm-hmm. Until we saw those marvellous sight of down in the, going north about an hour's ride, I suppose, we came to this little opening in the, as we came up this gully, a sort of pyramid, might have been a picture for that man who wrote, who painted that picture, the scapegoat, or Moses and Aaron on the Nebo, Mount Nebo, somewhere like that, because there were long gowns of white bearded man, three or four of them. Oh, the burghers of Calais it could have been. They're waiting to be for us to receive them and deal with them. Instead of that, we just passed on. We didn't. Our orders weren't to receive anybody. Oh, well, that was...
And you're familiar with the geography of Palestine through reading the Old Testament? So it was...
Oh, yes, yes. Mm. At school, you had to pass, for the Oxford Senior Local, you had to pass in religious knowledge, or else we didn't pass at all. I believe in London University, you had to pass in maths, so I opted for religious knowledge. So it was very helpful. Half the chaps didn't know where they were. They didn't know east from west. And this surprised me, because I learned it. But half of them, there were always one or two people who knew things. Like when we had this fight at Megiddo, we trotted down hour after hour, and somebody turned and see that. He says, that's where that woman was thrown through the window in so-and-so, and so, quoting the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. What's her name? I've forgotten it myself now. You know. Mm-hmm. Oh, dear. Yeah. She was thrown through the window. I ought to know. Anyway, it's surprising how between a gang of rough, not very rough people, a lot of them were yeomanry, and they weren't trained as viciously as I was. Mm-hmm. Lovett scouts and all those and that people. So it was pleasanter in that sense. It was, the atmosphere was more friendly, although rather independent-minded. We're all lone rangers. This is a thing which I don't think a lot of people understand, and it must have been the same in France. Everybody was really a lone ranger. You didn't confide like you would when you were 17 or even when you're a civilian and you tried to do one-upmanship on your sex appeal or all that sort of nonsense. It was not like that at all, in my opinion.
You kept very much yourself to yourself.
Yes. Sometimes somebody would share your bivouac by invitation. You could make a bivouac for one, or it could be made shared and have two. Mm. And I shared it for a bit with a man named Corden. Of course, I liked him. He was such a nasty person. He inherited his reputation as being a difficult man. I must have come before him, and I watched this. I watched the sergeant come and say, "Oh, you're Corden, are you?" Well, this man was a Cockney. And when he'd gone, he said, "You see, you're Corden, aren't you? I'm marked already. You're Corden." Which, anyway, took me back from a moment in the Second World War when the same sort of thing happened when I was doing the cavalry, the host, the guards, the riding master was very sarcastic to one huge fellow who has a voice rather light-coloured, as one would say. And they said to him, "What did you do in civil life?" And he said, "Nursery, Sergeant." "Nursery? It's like that woman used to say, handbag?" "Nursery, oh, nursery, oh, hell. And then they said the same old things about Rosie. You think you ride, you can't ride, pussy. And, you break my heart, you can't break, you broke my mother's heart, your mother's heart, you can't break. All that. They were using the same jokes, the same as they were doing when I was in the First World War. Mm. Hadn't changed a bit.
And do you keep in touch at all with people you were in the First War with?
No, I kept touch with Dale. Then he died fairly recently. And accidentally, I met somebody of the same name from Scotland, at Glasgow. I used to write to him on Christmas, exchange Christmas. I never knew what he did, never knew what I did, never asked, but he was a most charming man, and I think I remembered him because he knew I never got enough sleep. I'm a chap that likes to sleep, you see. And he said, "Now, I'll take your sitting at 2 a.m. instead of the last one, so that I could go to sleep on the third rack, the third watch. Then I got up on that. And he said, because I used to get up so early at my job that I have to wake up early. And then when we got through into another difficulty, he was a fair-haired red on his skin, and he got a terrible start of thirst. And I got a bottle full of water and drunk it long ago, and he was in agony. I'd been sucking a date stone in order to keep it. So I handed him over, and he drank the whole lot. That's why I remembered him. But he was a charming man, and I've been got in touch with him, because my mother had a woman there of the same name, and I said to her, do you know anybody named, the Scotch name, I forgot, Mac McKinnon, it wasn't. And she said, yes. And was he in the machine gun cavalry? He said, yes, I think he was. And so we renewed our acquaintanceship, and we wrote occasionally. He gave me bits of information when I asked for them. But never knew what he did for a living, and he never knew it. But, a few years after the war, one or two people met here, most disappointing. They were. It was then I found out they didn't know where they were going. They didn't know anything about the history of the Palestine. They didn't know anything, whether they go east, north, or anything. They weren't interested either. And I hope that Allenby knew.
I think so. I think Allenby knew. And these are drawings. These drawings are of Gaza.
Yes, various places there. Well, that's Gaza. That's the from the south end. I spent the night on the battleground where it had been on back and forth, and I happened to look in the tent, and there was something sticking up, and I looked in. It was a skeleton of a hand. Somebody had been only infinitely. Well, I just shook hands with it and forgot him. You get very hard, you know, hard. And you purposely do it. That's why sometimes I'm accused of being cruel, because I make a joke when it's out of taste. It's cover.
Yes. And this is the Leave Club in Port Said.
Yes, yes, it's Leave and Leave, yes. The Australians with the feathers. They were light infantry. They didn't like us having swords when they didn't. I think that was a mistake. They should have given them anything they wanted. They wanted swords. They were useless. And there's the Mosque of Muhammad Ali Pasha. It's it's a copy, I think, of the one in Constantinople. And it must have been looking down from the citadel, which was a hospital. That's how I couldn't have drawn that like that, because there's the tops of the houses in front. And that's Ferdinand de Lesseps.
Oh, that is the de Lesseps statue. And that's a...
That's Christmas.
And these are machine guns.
Yes. And that's Beirut. That's the observatory, American College. All the sheikhs of Arabi go to that college. I think it's been knocked about a bit.
Yes, it's been affected so recently.
I went, it was rather nice going the last few weeks. They allowed students to go there, and the chaps who weren't students didn't like us going. It was a lovely ride up on horseback right up to the to Beirut, and then handing it over to some Indians who were parking it for us. I went in and I worked hard on Persian architecture. Some lovely libraries it was. So nobody to teach you until 4 o'clock, and we had a nice lunch. Lunch where the first time in my life I'd met those rice wrapped around by vine leaves.
Of Don Mardes.
Yes. I thought that was funny, but it was like they were actually trams. We'd never been on. That you don't see anything like that, trams, the tram cars, how they're all fashioned. It seemed to be very sophisticated, to misuse the word.
And after you were demobbed from the army, you went to the Royal College of Art.
I went to Leeds first because the head of the leak place got demobbed. And the inspector turned up and he said, "You're wasting your time here. You better go somewhere." And he said, "I think Leeds will be the best place for you. It's a good school, and they get you down to Kensington because it's a very good school." And so I went to Leeds. That's where I found us. It was paintbrushes. They were so nice. And concentration as she was getting out of there. And her painting. She was marked from that moment.
I see.
And from there to Royal College, where it's another story, isn't it?
And who taught you at the Royal College? Did any of the people who had been official war artists in the First World War teach you there?
No, only Rothenstein had. He was older, and had one or two postcards of his work. It's very unwarlike. He was a scholarly man. We got very attached to him. He was one of the best speakers on art I've ever heard. Mostly ones heard chairman of local committees who know what art is, or they don't know what art is, but they know what they like and all that nonsense. But he helped to put us students as the salt of the earth, which is just what we needed, because we needed a bit of something like that. We were a bit eager and abject at the same time. And he also did a thing which was very helpful, people in the north. He invited us to his house. He also introduced us to people. There was one awful moment when I very crudely said to the girl next to me at one of these evenings, I said, "Who's that old buffer with the beard and there's like a monk?" She said, "That's my father." He was... do you remember what his name was? What?
Eric Kennington. No.
No, it wasn't Eric Kennington. It was some well-known
man. Huh? Sculptor. Under Metra.
Eric Gill.
That's
yeah,
right.
Eric Gill. Yeah. Good. 9 out of 10.
Thank you. So, and after leaving the Royal College,
yes,
you taught at Chelsea and...
I made a first visit.